You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with a debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including election results in Shasta County, Southern Oregon University's budget crisis, and allegations against a Humboldt County animal rescue. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, science, and environment reporter.
Okay, Roman, let's start with you. You and I were up late on Tuesday night reporting on election results from the California primary, and tantalizing time.
Yes.
You focused on results in Shasta County, where there were a few closely watched races. What were voters deciding on there?
Yeah, there were a few major races there, and that was kind of why we focused on Shasta County. The first was a ballot measure there, Measure B, which would make major changes to the election system there. It brought forward by these right-wing activists kind of seeking to change the elections to make them more transparent and secure and how they envision it. You know, many voters were focused on one aspect, which was requiring photo ID to be shown when voting. But, you know, it changes a lot of other things in major ways, like mandating hand counting of ballots instead of using machines, eliminating most voting by mail and not having early voting. So a lot of changes there. And then we're also following the county clerk's race, which is the person in charge of actually running the elections. And that race has kind of become this referendum on how elections should be run in the county. And then we also have been following the two county supervisors' races there because I followed the Board of Supervisors there for a long time. They've made a lot of controversial decisions, and two of the right-wing members of the board are up for re-election, and who wins in those races could shift the balance of power in the board.
Okay, well, let's start with the ballot measure, Measure B. What do the initial results tell us there?
Yeah, we just got another batch of results last night, a few thousand more. Right now, the yeses on Measure B are leading by almost exactly 2,000 votes. I talked to an opponent of the measure on Wednesday. He said he believes that a lot of the voters may not have looked too deeply into what the measure actually does. They just saw that, you know, it required voter ID and thought that that's what it was and supported it. Also, the opposition to the campaign didn't really do any campaigning to it. They didn't put up any signs or anything. And voter ID was kind of the big way proponents supported it. Their signs said voter ID in big letters on it. So that's what people saw when they saw about the measure. But it does a lot more than that. And, you know, a lot of what it does, including the voter ID aspect, appears to violate state and federal laws. So if it actually does end up passing, it's pretty likely to face legal challenges. I know that, you know, staff from the state attorney general's office have been at the elections office in Reading observing the count. One person on social media said that they were taking a lot of notes, so I'm sure that they are preparing for something in case this measure actually passes.
So more likely to come there.
Yeah.
Well, now tell us about the county clerk's race.
Yeah, and that's what's kind of interesting when you look at it compared to Measure B, because while voters seem to be approving Measure B, which makes a lot of these changes and supported by these far-right activists, they don't seem to be supporting the county clerk, who would be the biggest champion of those changes. So the incumbent, Clint Curtis, is currently losing by around 4,000 votes to someone that he had fired last year, the former assistant county clerk, Joanna Francis. Curtis was appointed in this controversial decision last year by the Board of Supervisors. He had no prior experience running elections, and they appointed him over Franciscat. He basically wants to remove all machines from the voting process, believes that they can be manipulated. He's made a lot of changes to the voting system since he took office, including the system of filming all the ballots being scanned, which is kind of part of the reason ballot counting has been really slow in Shasta County. They were one of the very last counties to fully report election night results, not until 4 a.m. on Wednesday. Franciscat, meanwhile, his opponent, has 17 years of experience in the office, and she's campaigned on restoring stability to the office. And, you know, based on the results right now, it kind of seems like stability is what the voters want to see with their elections.
And how about those two supervisor races where we've seen that the board is the focal point for a lot of controversy in the county?
Yeah. So three of the five supervisors on the board right now are part of this right-wing majority, and they've made a lot of controversial decisions in the past, including appointing Clint Curtis to that position. So two of those supervisors are up for re-election. One of the races is basically a rematch from 2022. Incumbent Kevin Cry is facing off against Reading City Council member Aaron Reznor. He went against her in 2022 for the first time and won by 90 votes. But this time, it seems like the results are swaying in Reznor's favor. She's leading by about 1,000 votes. Another right-wing activist, Rich Gallardo, was also running in that race, but he has far less votes than the other two. Right now, Reznor has more than 50% of the vote, which means she would actually win outright in the primary without having to compete against Cry again in the general election. But in the other race, Anderson City Council member Mike Gallagher is currently leading against the incumbent Chris Kellstrom, but Gallagher doesn't have that 50% majority, so that race could be heading to a runoff in November.
And we've heard 1,000 votes, 2,000 vote leads on some of these things. Do we have any idea how many ballots are left to count and how that could change things?
They could change things a lot. Yeah, some of these results are within a few thousand votes. And, you know, we got an update from the elections office today. They estimate that they have basically only counted about half of the ballots so far. They estimate that there could be 29,000 more ballots, which could change things significantly.
Yeah.
I mean, it really could.
It's anyone's game.
Yeah, honestly, any of the results I told you so far could completely swing in the opposite direction. We have really no way to tell. Ballots can continue to arrive up through next Tuesday. And what kind of makes things more stressful in this area is because of this special election that is happening at the same time to fill the congressional seat left vacant after Doug LaMalfa's death. So they have to certify that election early by June 11th, which is next Thursday. And they basically have to certify the whole election because it was all lumped in together. And, you know, that's a really tight timeline. Normally they would have till July 2nd to certify. So we're going to be tracking things through next week. We have no idea. You know, base ballots have been counted really slowly right now, but they really sounds like they have to really pick up the pace and count a lot of ballots in a really short amount of time.
Okay, we'll tune in next week for an update there. Thanks, Roman. Jane, you covered a student town hall this week at Southern Oregon University. First, remind us what's going on.
Right. Weekly update on SOU. So SOU is facing its third major fiscal crisis in the last few years. The institution needs to cut about $20 million in order to stay afloat. In terms of why that's happening, there's a lot of reasons. Lack of state funding, declining enrollment, increasing costs, shift in federal funding. There's been some issues with the budget and finance offices at SOU being understaffed and inadequate financial reporting, inadequate financial policies. So Deloitte Consulting came up with a report on what they recommend SOU do to fix this problem, which includes cutting academic programs, outsourcing administrative operations, leasing campus buildings. There was some pushback to that plan. And so now SOU leadership is sort of using that report, taking that plan into consideration, but coming up with their own plan, all on a very tight timeline. The key is that all of these changes, whatever is going to be done to the university, has to be done by next June in order for it to stay afloat. June of 2027 is when SOU is projected to run out of cash if there aren't any adjustments. So the institution basically needs to approve a plan and get it all done within a year. And so this plan that they're working on is being concocted basically in a matter of weeks. There are work groups and committees working on this. This plan, they're calling it the SOU Vitality Plan, which is a crazy fast timeline for a major restructuring of the institution. And I should note that JPR is licensed to SOU, and we cover the university just like any other institution.
And so what did SOU students have to say about all of this at the town hall?
Right. So the students have a lot of concerns. Students are worried, especially because the alternative to a plan that has been floated is shutting down the university. So the students are concerned. They brought up issues with potentially the role of AI. They're worried about possible program consolidations, particularly the music department, which in Deloitte's report, they plan to cut entirely. They had some concerns about tuition increases, which President Rick Bailey said there's no plan for that at this point. And then the students also had some interesting suggestions or recommendations for what the university should be looking at. So one freshman, Mason George, said he hadn't known a lot about the cool resources that the university offers. He thinks that SOU should do a better job advertising and marketing those resources to basically entice more students to come, increase enrollment, increase funding. Some students recommended focusing more on donations, selling off properties for revenue. There was a sophomore there named Tyler Penny who presented an outline that she had made, literally held up her notebook. She had made a suggestion for restructuring the university's academic model with a series of basically core departments and then concentrations within each of those. So the leadership says they're already working on that, reworking the academic model. And it was really good to hear from students. They've been trying to solicit feedback from a lot of different areas.
And so, Jane, what happens next?
So SOU President Rick Bailey plans to release a draft of this plan on June 15th. So that week will be a busy week. There's a lot of committee meetings, and the Board of Trustees is scheduled to vote on it on June 18th. So now is really the crunch time. They really need to start writing it now pretty soon. And the other thing is that SOU has to have a plan for long-term financial sustainability in order to receive $15 million in emergency funding from the state. It's currently on track to do that, but if SOU doesn't come up with a plan, it probably wouldn't get that money if they have no plan. So that money is what the university needs in order to survive the 26-27 fiscal year. So it's kind of a hard place to be. The university has to approve a plan really as soon as possible, and they want to get it right the first time because they only have a year to implement it. So it's a really difficult task, and President Bailey said at the town hall this week that no one, including him, is going to be happy with the outcome.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about this.
Yes.
And Justin, you had a story about residents protesting an animal shelter in Humboldt County. Why were they protesting?
Yeah, so this story involves a place called Miranda's Rescue. That's an animal sanctuary in Fortuna. It's on 50 acres of land, and basically they take all sorts of animals, including exotic animals, but many locals know them for taking dogs and cats and other pets, which the sanctuary says they either adopt out to families or they let them live on this property. And people and organizations like shelters actually pay the shelter to take these pets, and it can be a substantial amount, so hundreds of dollars or maybe thousands of dollars if there's multiple pets and there's transportation involved. And this story broke last month, actually, when the sheriff's office searched the property, which kicked off these protests and all this outrage.
And so just to be clear, it's shelters in other parts of California typically transferring dogs there for and then paying a fee for them to adopt them out or take care of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, what did they find when they looked at Miranda's Rescue?
So a police investigator found dead animals. So they found 8 dead dogs, and some of those dogs looked to have been shot. One of the dogs had a microchip, so you could trace its identity. And according to this Humboldt investigator, that dog came from a shelter in Oakland less than a month ago. And that shelter was told by Miranda's Rescue that the dog had been adopted out, but that obviously hadn't happened. So according to the search affidavit of the property, the investigator said he thinks the owner, Shannon Miranda, has killed this dog and others for financial gain, basically so that the shelter can take in more animals, get the money from shelters and individuals, and not take up space. And according to the this is all, by the way, according to the search affidavit, this is not a charge, and that's really important to remember. Shannon Miranda hasn't been charged with anything. Right now, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department says they're in the process of investigating potential crimes at the sanctuary, and those include animal abuse and fraud, but they say that this is a very complex case, and it might take a bit.
And so what caused the Sheriff's Department to search the property, actually?
Yeah, this is an interesting part of the story. So there have been people in the community that it seems for years have questioned the operations at Miranda's Rescue. And this came really to a head when two women snuck onto the property recently to search what they thought could be mass graves for dogs. One of the women actually bought the neighboring property to Miranda's Rescue so they could monitor the sanctuary. But these two women are the ones who first dug up these dogs, saw that it looks like they had been shot, and they contacted police.
And so no charges have been filed, as you said. Why did you decide to report on this now?
So, yeah, we've been following this story somewhat, and it's hard when no charges are filed because you don't want to report on rumor, especially when someone's reputation or business is at stake. But this story's it's really grown to such a level now that there are protests. People are showing up at Board of Supervisors meetings. So it's really out in the open. Shelters in California have also said they are no longer sending animals to the sanctuary. There's Facebook groups that I went on where people are trying to track down their animals that they gave to this rescue to see what happened. And so I thought it would be a good start for now, just laying out what we actually know at this time.
And quickly, what did the owner of Miranda's rescue have to say?
He's denied all allegations and kind of told the public to hold off until, you know, the court system, if that occurs, can separate fact from fiction.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Justin. That's it for the debrief this week. Thank you for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions of things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.